Welcome to PHCP Pros Behind the Wall podcast. I'm Ellen Rohr, plumber's wife, industry icon, and COO of Zoom Drain Franchising Company. With this podcast, our intention is to have real, thought-provoking conversations with people from across the PHCP industry. Of course, we want to entertain and encourage. Mostly, we want to connect and allow our guests to be vulnerable, to explore insights gained and lessons learned. Let's go behind the wall. In this episode, I'm going to visit with a man whom I love and admire and have known for many, many years. I think we go back like 30 years at this point. I always gauge it, Dan, on how old Max is and where we were with the RPA and when we got started in the Radiant Panel Association, which is where I first met my friend Dan Foley. And Dan is the president and owner of Foley Mechanical in the DC area. I'm going to ask him to tell a little bit more about his story. He is within our industry, within the PHC community, an icon, an OG, a legend. He knows a lot about mechanical systems and hydronics. More importantly, today, I want to get to know a little bit about you, Dan. So now, as a little framework, yesterday, I listened to the off-the-cuff interview you did with Steve Smith, and you talked about your experience with COVID-19. It is a compelling story. And dear listener, if you haven't listened to that off-the-cuff podcast with Dan, I encourage you to do that. I want to touch on that and the impact that's had on your life, but not just yet. So if you would please, Dan, introduce yourself, and then I'm going to ask you a few questions about what makes you tick.
Thanks for the introduction, Alan. Good to see you again, my old friend. My name's Dan Foley. I'm a contractor. I'm based in the Washington, D.C. area. Been doing this for 30 years, 32 to be exact, and I've had my own company for almost 19 years. And what we're known for, Ellen, are the large custom homes. I call them the Taj Mahals. By dollar volume, that's half of our business. It's the architect-driven monstrosities, I'll call them. The 20,000, our biggest to date is 42,000 square foot. House. And that's what we're known for. Now, we do everything. We do full service changeouts, service calls, repairs, replacement. We do all that, but we're known for our big architect-driven custom homes here in the DC metro area.
You have a really exciting niche. And, you know, one of the ways that we got to know each other a little bit is you asked me to work with you in your financials. And you were one of the savviest people I've met when it comes to your financials. And I remember from that experience how much you love your team. And I remember talking to you about the ratios and you're like, listen, this is a unique business. This is how I make money. And I learned a thing or two from you on how to structure a business to support what's important to you and to still make lots of money. I love, love, love your niche and your business model.
Well, I learned a lot from you too, Ellen, because I remember the sitting down and looking at the books after working for a year, working 7, 8, 10, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week. And at the end of the year, adding it all up, and I made a meager 3% net profit, 3%. And I said, something's wrong with this picture. How could I work so hard for this little money? And we sat down. And the problem was I budgeted 10%, which I thought was a fair net profit, but you never hit budget. Things get broken, tools get lost, trucks get wrecked. Before you know it, that 10% shrinks down to 3%. It was going to a negative number before we sat down and I figured out how to properly budget and budget 25%. And that now I can net 13 to 15% budgeting 25%.
Isn't that pretty? Because, you know, stuff happens. My mentor, Frank Lau, taught me that. He was one of the sharpest numbers crunchers ever. And I would say, how come you budget for 30% and you only get 25 or 20? Like in my naivete, I asked him this question and he said, because stuff happens. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. And that's exactly the lesson that you learned. And I feel you on that too, because when once upon a time, Hot Rod and I had our business in Park City, Utah, I, like you, was working for the richest people on the planet. How come we're losing money? And it wasn't their fault. It was my fault. And, you know, your customers had second homes in Park City, Utah, or third or fourth homes.
Absolutely. You're scared to death to charge $15,000 for a boiler changeout because everyone's going to say, you know, I'll call somebody else. And guess who the only person that's afraid to charge? That was me. My customers, right? They wanted heat. If you could do it, they're going to pay you. And they didn't complain. They wanted our professional services. I was the only one afraid to charge that amount. And you taught me, don't be afraid. Do the numbers. That's your price. And that's what it is.
Well, you are, oh, I'm going to cry. I cry easy, but you are why I do what I do, because I love contractors so much. I met Hot Rod. I got introduced to this cool trade and the awesome people in it. Tell me about your history. Like, how did you come to find this industry? Go back as far as you can remember in terms of, did you like working with your hands? Did you like tools or cars?
No, I wish it was something like that, but it was a summer job. I worked over the summers at a company called Arlington Heating and Air. And then I graduated in June, didn't have a job lined up. So I figured I'll go drive the truck and deliver parts at Arlington Heating over the summer while I try to figure out what I want to do. And that was the summer of 1988. And this business, once it sucks you in, it doesn't let you out. So I ended up working at Arlington Heating for 15 years, from 1988 to 2002, and then down in April of 2002.
So, you know, Hot Rod has a similar story to share. He said that when he graduated from high school, his dad was a plumber. And the one thing he didn't want to be was a plumber. So he got jobs doing plumbing. First off, he joined a circus and a thrill show. That's how he got his nickname. But that's his interview. We'll leave it alone. But he got jobs doing what he knew how to do in this, with this idea that until he figured out what he wanted to do, he would do plumbing. So not exactly the same, but still that idea that this is temporary until I find something else. And there you were at Arlington.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have good mentors. Tom and Linda Croker, who own Arlington Heating, or owned at the time, were like a second set of parents to me. And Tom's father, we affectionately called him Old Man Croker, kind of took me under his wing and was my mentor when I worked there. And he always did his pet projects with me, took me out to the job sites, showed me how he learned how to do the trade. And I wrote a column about that back in about 10 years ago. And to this day, he still means so much to me.
What was it about that relationship that you remember? Like, take me back to a moment in time when you guys were, you know, had some windshield time. How did he treat you?
Well, it's the funny thing is, I thought I was learning the technical side of the business, but the people side of the business. He was like a grandfather to me, because I never had a grandfather growing up. One of my grandfathers died before I was born. The other one died when I was two. So I never had a grandfather. So he was kind of like my grandfather. And we'd always drive together. I'd drive his car. We'd always drive together to the job sites and just chat back and forth. And here's a quick story that we'll tell you about. Because he started his company in 1939, right? The Great Depression. And we'd done a job together. And the client wanted to give me a check for the job. We're in this kitchen. I remember this to this day. The client had his checkbook out. And I said, oh, no, we got an accounting department. They'll send you a bill and you can just mail the check in. And we left the job and we sat down in the car. And he didn't say anything. He just looked at me and he called me Danny. And he talked like this. Danny, did that customer offer you a check? Yes, sir, Mr. Croker. Go back in there and get it. Knock the door at the client for the check. And I thought he was just giving me a hard time. And then when we're driving back to the shop, he told me about running his company in the Great Depression. When he had to make payroll on Friday with no money in the bank, so he'd run from job site to job site on Thursday, collecting $5 here, $10 there, so he could make payroll on Friday. And I never lived that. I had a very privileged life growing up. We weren't rich, but we weren't poor. I never wanted anything growing up. And I never understood that side of it. The money's in the checkbook. Just write the check. Well, I didn't realize that cash is what makes the money flow. And he taught me that and explained it to me in a way I could understand it, which I didn't before. And that's just a quick story. And that was, when a customer offers to pay, you collect. You don't tell them to mail.
Take the money.
That was 35 years ago. It still sticks with me to this day, or 30 years.
Now, how did your family feel about you moving into the trades? Were they excited about that? Were they hesitant? Were you supported in your decision?
Well, my parents have always been supportive of me. That they paid for my school and education. My father was career military, so he wanted me to go into the military. And coming out of high school, I applied to the Naval Academy, but didn't quite have the grades to do it. So I went to Virginia Tech, went to 4 years. And when I graduated, my father still wanted me to go into the military. But I realized after that, that's not what I wanted to do. It's what he wanted. It's not what I wanted. So I won't say he was disappointed. I would just say it's not the career path he would have chosen. But of course, now that I run a successful business, they're very proud of me. But I will say that coming out of school, they were expecting something different, not disappointed, but just expecting something different. But I think they realize now that I love what I do. I wouldn't do it for 30 years if I didn't enjoy doing it. And they're very proud of my accomplishments.
That took some courage. You know, as you talk about that too, the brightest service people I know, troubleshooters I know, aren't necessarily great at school. Was that your experience?
Oh, no, I was good, but to get in the Naval Academy, you got to have
be really good.
So I didn't have bad grades, but I didn't have great. I didn't have great. I wasn't 4.0. Maybe I'd say maybe a 3.5 come out of high school. I got into Virginia Tech, which is a very distinguished school. And then even when I graduated, I was slated to go into officer candidate school. But as luck would have it, I broke my ankle 2 weeks before playing basketball. So that put it on hold for a year. And once that year passed, that was it. I was already into working in this industry.
That's cool. So the worst thing sometimes becomes the best thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It was just happenstance or serendipity that I happened to break my ankle 2 weeks before I was supposed to go to OCS.
Okay. So tell me then, you work for Arlington and Michael Gerber calls this the entrepreneurial seizure. And that's when you realize that I want to start a business of my own. Tell us about that.
Well, I started out at Arlington Heating, like I say, as a summer truck driver, a helper. And I gradually gained the skills. And again, going back to old man Croker, when I kind of, not going to say complain, but I didn't enjoy being a helper, being told what to do. And you didn't get to work on the cool stuff. You had to knock the hole and clean up the trash. That's what a helper does. Mm-hmm. So I won't go beyond that. And his answer was, then learn how to do it. In other words, I don't make you a mechanic. You got to learn how to be a mechanic. So I worked with a guy by the name of Doug Ashwood, who still works at Arlington Heating. I was his helper for the summer. Why? Because nobody wanted to work with him. Well, he wasn't mean or nasty. He was just very demanding. He wouldn't settle for second best. And I could see that. I could see that in him. Other guys didn't want to work with him because he made you do this or do that and do it a certain way. Well, I'll go work with this guy. He's easy. He lets me do whatever I want. I could see I could learn from him. So I worked a whole summer with him. And it wasn't easy, but I learned how to be a technician. We still talk to this day. And I got into a truck and was a junior technician, then an installer, then a service tech. And then I kind of butted heads with the service manager. And now keep in mind, Arlington Heating was a big company, 40 employees, had a whole service department. So we had a branch office. And I told my boss, Tom, I'd like to run that office. Well, I'd only been there for 2 years. How can you run an office after working there 2 years? Well, I didn't know what I didn't know. I just knew I wanted to be my own boss. So I had a lot of the entrepreneurial spirit still working for another company. And I turned that company from just me to, by the time I resigned Arlington Heating, we had five or six employees at that branch office doing $1 million a year. And then I came back to the main branch after the service manager resigned or was let go and ran the whole company for my last 2 or 3 years there. And I left there in 2002. So I was there for 15 years, good portion of my life.
So how did you leave? How did you make the move?
Well, when you're driving to work in the morning and you're questioning why you're doing that, that's when you know something's got to change. And it wasn't anything with the company. My bosses, Tom and Linda, were wonderful. They let me do whatever I want. I'm going to go into RPA functions, go into training, hold-in-hand classes. If I signed up for it, they let me do it. All I had to do was produce results. And what I realized is that I wanted to do something different. Okay, I like doing the large architect-driven jobs, but it tied up too much of my time. I couldn't do both. I couldn't run a 40-person company and still run these big jobs. I had to decide. So I realized I wanted to do something different. So I resigned Arlington Heating. That was October of 2001. I said I was down for 4 more weeks. I ended up staying for 6 months, tying up all my loose ends because I didn't want to leave them halfway through a project. I tied up every one of my loose ends and then left in April of 2002.
That's an extraordinary story. You know, just to make sure that you didn't leave on bad terms and that the next round of leadership was well prepared.
Yeah, I think there were still some hurt feelings, no question. After you work somewhere for 15 years, there's bound to be. But I didn't want to saddle them with jobs that I took on, were halfway done, and then say, see you later. Good luck knocking it out. I wanted to stay and tie everything up till it was finished.
So tell me about those early days of being out on your own. Were there ever some like, wait a minute, why did I do this?
Well, what I realized is that Arlington Heating had a great name. And I was obviously at the time trading off that name because I went and called some of the architects that I dealt with. And I thought I'd start out doing just some design work and then maybe doing like load calculations and duct layouts for the architects. And when they found out I was a one-man show, they said, well, you can't do a 30,000 square foot job with one employee, you. So I was an eye opener. And after 1 or 2 or 3 months of just doing design work, that wasn't paying the bills. Now, luckily, I was in a financial situation. I'm very conservative financially, where I wasn't relying on a paycheck every Friday, but I realized looking ahead, that wasn't gonna, it wasn't a long-term viable plan, put it that way, is what mm-hmm. I realized. So I started out doing some smaller stuff, doing some change outs, doing some service calls for friends and family, working out of my garage. And then I quickly, you know, added 2, 3. I think by the end of the first year, I had 6 employees. So I grew pretty quickly, but I grew because I didn't take a paycheck for about 18 months. I could have taken a paycheck, but it would have inhibited growth. I wanted to buy trucks, tools. And here's a funny story. I went to my bank, who I'd done business with for years and years, and asked for a business loan. And so their first question was, how long have you been in business? And my answer was about 2 weeks. And they said, come back and see me in 2 years. And I said, 2 years? I need a loan now. I won't need it in 2 years. And so they asked for projected incomes. And I was like, well, you know, like I said, I've only been in business 2 weeks. My income's zero. I have no income. So they're like, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Foley. We'll be seeing you. So there was no note there. The people weren't lining up to make loans. So what I ended up doing was I ended up selling my house, which was almost paid for, and basically self-financing for the first 2 years. And rather than take a paycheck, I bought trucks, tools, and hired employees. So we grew relatively quickly so I could take on the work. But if I'd planned better, I would have lined up either a line of credit or financing. I thought I could just walk in, sign the papers, and walk out of there with a $100,000 note. Didn't happen. No way, no how. They would do it personally, which I didn't want to do. I didn't want to tie my personal asset to the business. And my parents also offered to help, but I didn't want that awkward meeting at the Christmas dinner table saying, hey, you're 3 weeks behind on that last payment. I didn't want to tie my family to my business. So while I was very gracious, I declined that offer.
So at this point, are you married? Do you have kids? Is there like, how's this going?
No, no married. My kid was my dog at the time.
Okay. So you're going, you're just working.
Yeah. So I could take risks that maybe someone else may not have been able to take. So I took a lot of risks. I put all my chips in on the table at one time. And luckily it's worked out. Almost 20 years later, 19 years later, we're still going strong.
How did it go to hire an employee? You had some experience managing team members at Arlington, but how was it, you know, because it's a different thing now when someone's putting their chips in with you and they may have a family and they have a life. Do you remember what that felt like?
Yeah, because that when you talk about family, that is my family. So I'm obligated to keep, if I hire 6 people, I'm obligated to provide health insurance to them and their families to keep them busy. You can't just say, hey, sorry, there's no work this week. Go home. I'll see you next Monday. They got a mortgage payment, they got car payments, they got school tuition to pay. So I certainly felt obligated from that end. And, you know, to be honest, I always thought that my biggest problem would be to find work and or technical fix. But guess what? Neither one of those have been a problem. I'm in the DC area, okay? So the federal government prints money, okay? It's not just, I mean, we don't do work directly for the federal government, but it influences business around here. All the major players that want to influence government have headquarters here, and that runs business through this area. So the DC market is very strong. The economy is strong. It's not a one pony town. Like, for example, I'll use like Detroit, that's driven by the auto industry, or other areas where Houston, that's driven by the oil business. We don't have that. We're a very diverse economy. And I've never had a situation where somebody wanted hours and we couldn't get them work. That's just not happened. Not in 20 years.
That's so cool. Well, you take a lot of personal responsibility for your success, and always you seem driven, like you knew that this is where you wanted to go. Did you have a moment where you just thought, I've had it? I mean, in a business like yours, maybe 2008, 2009, knocked you back on your heels a little bit. Have you had a moment in business where you thought, I have to regroup and retrench?
But you certainly have those feelings when things don't go right, but I realize that they're fleeting. So you take a step back, regroup, and tomorrow's a new day. So as bad as things go, as bad as something's going to happen, you realize that it's not the end of the world, that you can recover from it. I've had multiple situations like that. We're not immune to problems. I think we all have them. My service manager hired a bunch of his friends, and it turned into a big party at Foley Mechanical. So I had to fire 5 people in one fell swoop, even though it really hurt me. I needed his technical skills. I just didn't need his partying skills. And so we cut bait and took a step back. But it's a decision that had to be made. We tried to fix it. It couldn't be fixed. There was only one solution. And that was the difficult decision. He was like a brother to me, but it just wasn't working out. That was early on. That was probably 2 or 3 years into it. We've had situations where the client doesn't pay you, or, you know, financial situations at times. No one's immune to that, but you just step back, find a solution and move on.
What voices through the years have had an impact on you, maybe technically, operationally, from a leadership standpoint? Are there books that you've read or people that you've followed who have shaped you as a leader?
Oh, yeah. So certainly my father, first and foremost. He's a retired Marine Corps colonel. And at the time he retired, there were only about 230 of them in the entire Marine Corps. So he's very accomplished. He set the tone for me growing up, taught me self-reliance. I remember growing up thinking, well, why is my father so hard on me? And I realized he's not there to be my buddy, to go out and drink beer with or what have you. He's there to be my father. He instilled on me self-reliance, do your best, and don't accept second best always. So that would be number one. I mentioned Mr. Croker at Arlington Heating. He taught me so much growing up. But from the industry standpoint, our good friend Dan Holohan taught me about hydronics, because when I worked at Arlington Heating, we were primarily air. Nobody did boiler work in DC. That's gas, you know, forced air, heat pumps. And Dan's the one that said, no, you can do it. And I went back to my boss and said, you know, why aren't we doing radiant heat? That's growing. Well, what if it leaks? There's always a what if. What if it leaks? What if it doesn't work? How are you going to? So you can't do that. You just got to step in, whether you know it or not. You got to jump in. He's the one that taught me to go for it. Give it a try. See what happens. And now that's over. Hydronics is well over half my business, probably 70%. So that was back in the early 90s, maybe the late 80s, early 90s when I first went to a seminar. I didn't even know who he was. Mm-hmm. And he's one of my, you know, mentors and good friends. As a matter of fact, his daughter, Erin, is my webmaster. She lives here in the Silver Spring. She lives in the DC metro area. She's my webmaster. So I consider them like family as well.
Awesome. What about on a business standpoint, as far as operations, or did you join an association? How did you find things that you didn't know?
Well, certainly through associations, going back to my RPA days with Hot Rod. Hot Rod and I served on the board together for many, many years.
Okay. That's right.
I think Hot Rod was president the year after I was. So we served on the board probably 5 or 6 years together. And then I'm also on the board of ACCA and have been a member of my entire career. So I learned so much from them as well, because the people sitting next to you at the table are smarter than you are. And I learn to listen more and talk less and learn from the brightest minds in the business. And it's the type of thing, you mentioned what books, of course, Michael Gerber, I've learned so much from him, and you read it and you just kind of up and down because he's talking. It's like he's talking to you because he knows exactly what you're going through. And it's the type of thing where your strength is your weakness, because I like to think that I'm technically competent, but I also know how to run a business. But guess what? I'm like that guy on TV back in the 70s that was spinning all the plates around the table. That was me. I can put out every fire. I can do everything. And guess what? You can't, because if you step back and let your technicians and your people take over, guess what? Not only are they good at it, they're better than you. And I found that out so hard. Nobody's better than me. Nobody. But guess what? Take a step back and let my guys step up. Not only are they better, they can do it quicker, better, more efficient if you just give them the opportunity. My problem is I never did, because I thought I could do it better. And I learned the hard way. I can't. Case in point, you brought up earlier, I've been out for the last 5 weeks. And it used to be, if I go on vacation, I was on my phone or computer all day long. Okay. So I didn't even enjoy my vacation. Well, I was on a forced vacation. I was in the hospital for 1 week and out entirely, not even answering the phone or email. And guess what? My business was still there and my guys did a great job without any input from me for 3 weeks. It doesn't sound like much, but it's never been done in 19 years. I've never done it. So I realized I don't need to be there. My guys are capable of running the show without me. And it's so hard. Easy to say, it's so hard to do, because you want to step in and do it. And the hardest thing is to stand back and let your guys bloom, let them blossom, do their job and do a great job.
That's a really powerful moment. Like, the worst things become the best things, but being out of your business like that and having that, you know, your story, you talk about getting COVID-19, your story is like you just got hit by a wrecking ball. Like, this was a big knockdown physically. What kind of awarenesses have you had as a result, personally, professionally? Like, what's changed for you as a result of that experience, in addition to knowing that your team will step up?
Well, many things. Yeah. That first and foremost, that I don't need to be there. My guys can handle it. Second thing, I've been going at 90 miles an hour for the past 15, 16, 18 years. And I'm not 35 years old anymore. I'm 54. I can't do it. My body can't take it anymore. And so I realized I can't do this 12 hours a day 6 days a week. I need to step back, slow down, plan a vacation where you actually go on vacation and turn your phone off. Call me if it's a true emergency, but otherwise leave me alone for just a week at a time, clear my head. So while I was sick, I feel rejuvenated mentally. I've cleaned house and I got a fresh mind to move forward now. And that was so hard to do. I just felt like I had to work every single day. Well, that's internal. That's not external. You don't have to work every day, but you feel like you have to. And if you don't, the whole thing's going to go down the toilet. Well, it's not going to. And that was so hard. I had to experience this. Like I would have never done it on my own. I had to experience this to realize I don't need to be there every day, 5 days, 6 days a week.
Well, your energy right now is fantastic. Tell us about your family. Who is in your life these days?
Well, you've met Christina before.
Yeah.
Was it Jackson Hole? I forget where we were. I think it was Jackson Hole.
It was Jackson. That was fun. Max was there.
Max was in high school at the time.
We went kayaking, and it was an awesome location for an event. I did not attend all the classes.
By the way, Max lives about 5 miles from me, and of course, he works at Rahal, which is maybe 10 miles from my house. So he's right here in my neighborhood.
And you know, he has a baby.
I did not know that.
He does. I'm probably going to get in trouble because, you know, he's super private and everything. But
of course, he
does. He has a little baby named Luca, and we're so excited to be grandparents. So that can change things, right?
When you and Hot Rod come to visit, make sure you be up because I'm literally 5 miles from Max.
You know, I will. And that's an awesome invitation. And we were supposed to go up there for the month of April and, you know, did not. So first on my list when we're moving again is to go up there. And I think we're going to take the camper up and just make like a road trip out of it. So we will definitely come and see you and Christine. And you have a dog that looks like my dog Socks, a striped dog. I saw it on your LinkedIn page.
Greyhound rescue.
I thought you looked a little skinnier, not skinny, but I thought, I wonder if that's a greyhound. That's beautiful. What's her name or his name?
Her name is Piper. We've had her for 5 years. She was a champion racer, but she broke her leg. And of course, usually they just put them down when that happens. And we adopted her about 5 years ago. And then most recently in February, we've got a second Greyhound adoption. Aww. That's Glow. She's only 2 years old. She wouldn't race. She raced 7 times, came in dead last, all 7 of them. She wasn't a runner. So we've had her. She's real skinny, but she's put on some weight. We've had her for about 3 months now. So we got 2 Greyhounds.
So there you go.
Part of my rehab is to walk. Now I walk about 10 miles a day with them. Now Piper's 10. So now when she sees the leash, she hides. She's tired of walking, but the young one likes to go on all the walks. Piper, after 2 or 3 of them, she's had enough and goes and hides in the corner.
Well, can you walk that far yet? Or are you building back up to that?
No, I'm building back up. That's where I'm at now. When I first started recovering, I could walk to the corner and back, and that was about it. So I've got a loop that's about 2 miles, and I do that 4, maybe 5 times a day, more on weekends. But I've been averaging about 10 miles a day, but not in one fell swoop. That's over 4 or 5 walks, shorter ones, and it's making me feel a whole lot better.
The fresh air, the, you know, just mentally and physically, you know, if you could bottle walking, right, it's almost a miracle drug. So I'm so happy about that. What is it that, you know, from your career, if you were to be asked, because I'm going to be asking, what is the piece of advice that you would give to someone who's got an entrepreneurial spirit like you? What would you want to encourage them? How would you encourage them?
Well, that's just so easy. Never give in to your fears. Because I had ideas of starting my company 5 years before I did. I think I was capable, but you play mind games. You know, what if I can't make payroll? What if I don't have the money? What if I go bankrupt? You know, what if I lose my house over this? And you always play negative, but I wouldn't even listen to those thoughts today. Just go for it. Make a step forward. You will find a solution. No matter what problem you encounter, you're going to find a solution. I started my company when I was 34. I wish I'd done it when I was 29 or 30 because I felt like I could have. I just gave into my fears. So the answer is that's easy. If you have a dream, go for it. Reach for the sky. And if you don't hit it, try again. When you fall down, which you're going to, get back up and do it again. Don't quit. Don't give up.
I think of myself as a positive person. My candle is so much brighter from being in your presence today. Thank you so much for the inspiration and for the great words and for being a good friend. The selfish reason I wanted to do this podcast is I knew I could call on people I know and like and get to know them and like them a little bit better. And that has happened today. So thank you so much, my friend. You are wonderful.
Thanks so much, Alan. Be sure to say hi to Hot Rod for me.
I will holler at him. He's in the other room doing a podcast. And we'll come see you when we come up to Virginia. Love, love, love. And that will do it for this edition of Behind the Wall, starring Dan Foley. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Ellen. Talk to you later. I'll see you.